34. Aid.
A single Gangolin has the capacity to topple a small army. I once had the pleasure of decimating a battalion of footmen. The battle was glorious. None survived.
From Colvinar Bryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 247. After speculating about poor Amandal, Morjadain and the others spoke briefly about the situation with Calamir. Ildin insisted that they needed to dispel the hold Vaem had on the commander. Dougal, however, didn't care. In fact, he was adamant that they do nothing for the commander, as Calamir wouldn't sanction any action to help Amandal. Belinia was the only one who hadn't voiced her opinion on the matter. She was too busy crying. Morjadain, however, came down on Ildin's side. If Vaem had gotten a hold on the commander, then the entire expedition would be subject to her whims, whatever they might be. The Mandalorians had already come to Tartalim before and had obviously failed. Whatever Vaem wanted was probably not aligned with the expedition's mandate from the Order's Council. And that made Morjadain nervous. With the commander wrapped around her finger, so to speak, there was no one preventing Vaem from doing as she pleased. She had to be stopped. Once everyone finished their stew, Morjadain, Sylas, and Dougal left the tent. Dougal was insistent about finding a Tebisrol that could help Amandal.
"I'm sure we'll find something," he said, running a hand through his hair. "As grand as this place is, there is bound to be some sort of Tebisrol that can heal him."
"We can only hope," Morjadain thought.
The trio picked their way across the camp as lively conversations carried between the tents. Talk of the monster, the Tebisrols, and the strangeness of Tartalim. As they neared the camp's edge, Jakim emerged from a tent.
"You're alive!"
the necromancer exclaimed, hurrying toward Morjadain and the others.
"Of course we're alive," Dougal said. "And where have you been?"
Jakim thumbed back to his tent.
"I just woke up. Oh, I needed that nap. Not sure how I made it to my tent, though."
"We had to carry you," Sylas muttered. "And that was no nap."
"It wasn't?"
Jakim scratched his head, then muttered to himself.
"It's probably around noon,"
Morjadain said in amused exasperation. Then he pointed to the camp's edge.
"Why don't you come along with us? We're looking for a Tebisrol to help Amandal."
The necromancer jerked back.
"Help Amandal? What happened to him?"
"It seems he's gone mad," Dougal said. "The monster got to him, engulfed him in that mist."
Jakim looked utterly confused.
"The big black thing," Sylas added. "The one we saw briefly. Its mist makes people crazed."
Jakim's eyes bulged.
"Come on," Morjadain said, walking past Jakim. "We can talk while we search."
Fench flew toward the field where the two legs made their flimsy rooms.
"Weird things."
He held tight to the kisaliks, careful not to drop them. Zipping around the flimsy rooms, he soared toward the one where Amandal lay.
"That mean Orath monster,"
Fench whispered. He soon entered and fluttered to a halt. That female two-leg was still crying, and Ildin was kneeling beside Amandal. The sight reminded Fench of when he last spoke to his mother.
"Mother."
Sorrow filled Fench's heart.
"You're back,"
Ildin said, rising from beside the weird bed thing. Fench nodded and held out his arms, dropping two of the kisaliks. He had brought five. Usually it only took eating one to fall asleep, but Amandal had eaten umbiliums, and he was bigger than a tulidine.
"What do we do with these?"
Ildin asked, picking up the kisaliks. Both easily fit in his palm.
"Eat them," Fench said.
Why did two legs always ask silly questions? Ildin chuckled, examining the kisaliks.
"Like this."
Fench dropped all but one and held the kisalik by its ends. He dug his fingers into its skin and broke it in half. Thick white juice oozed from the kisalik as Fench fluttered to Amandal. He held the broken food over the human's mouth, waiting for it to drip. But Kisalik juice always took a long time to drip.
"Does he eat the whole thing?" Ilden asked.
"If he likes bitter things," Finch said. "I don't like the outsides. Yucky."
He shook his head and his trunk flapped back and forth. Ilden shook his head too.
"He probably doesn't like bitter things either."
"Why don't I feed him?" Ilden said, kneeling by the weird bed thing.
"If you want," Finch said.
He waited for Ilden to grab the broken Kisalik. The gooey juice had almost dripped onto Amandal's mouth. Ilden took the food and turned around.
"Felinia, be ready to make him swallow."
The female two-leg didn't say anything. She just kept crying. Finch studied her for a moment, then turned back to Ilden and Amandal. Ilden was ripping pieces off and putting them in Amandal's mouth.
Yucky.
It took a long time for Ilden to feed Amandal all five of the Kisaliks. Finch had since coiled his tail on the ground and leaned against Amandal's big brown bag.
"He's asleep,"
the female two-leg muttered. She had finally stopped crying.
"Good,"
Ilden said, sighing. He turned from Amandal, looking across the tent.
"I can stay with him if you want a rest."
She shook her head.
"Well, lie down on my cot,"
Ilden said, turning to Amandal again. His weird lips puckered and his forehead wrinkled. Sighing, Ilden reached for Amandal's neck.
Why was he doing that?
Ilden did something Finch couldn't quite see, then lifted a golden string that held a blue rock.
"We should probably keep this safe," he said, moving toward Amandal's big brown bag. "Excuse me, Finch."
Ilden reached for the bag's top and Finch leaned back. Once it was open, the two-leg dropped the rock inside.
"I'm going to look for Vaim," Ilden said, walking to the door. "Why don't you let me take over the Yeltis?"
The other two-leg, Fae-something, muttered a reply, but Finch was too preoccupied with Amandal's bag. The flimsy door flapped shut as Finch stuck his head into the bag. Well, part of it. He let his trunk hang outside. If it were inside, it would just get in the way. Curious, he grabbed the blue rock.
"What is this?"
he wondered, raising the rock to his eyes. It had shiny yellow specks in it. Finch looked back inside and saw the black thing Amandal had him wash. Holding the rock by the gold string, Finch lifted the black dome from the bag. He looked back and forth between the two things, his trunk swaying.
"I wonder what these are for."
Ever curious, he pushed the things together. As they touched, brown light surged from the black dome thing and wrapped around the blue rock. As more brown light appeared, the two things pushed away from each other, forcing Finch's hands apart. The push only lasted a short while, stopping as the light faded. Finch jerked and rested his hands on the pack.
"That was strange," he muttered, looking back and forth between the two things.
Beyond the tents and the makeshift mess area lay the Tevis rolls. They were arranged in rows and columns on the dark teal grass, organized by size. Five robed men, who Morjadayan didn't know, were studying the various objects and taking notes.
"Excuse me," Morjadayan shouted to them.
The nearest fellow turned, raising a thick gray eyebrow.
"Yes?"
"Have you cataloged any of these?"
Dougal asked.
"By what they do, I mean."
The man shook his head.
"We're just sorting them by size and shape, pairing identical objects."
Another man at the end of the farthest row turned and shouted,
"We don't know what most of these do. They're unlike any other Tevis rolls we've seen."
Morjadayan drew his lips to a line.
"Great,"
he sighed, studying the various rows. The objects glowed with different colors, though some were not lit.
"Probably dormant."
Nothing looked familiar in the slightest. These Tevis rolls were not like what he knew and understood.
"This could take a while," Dougal said.
"It'll take too long."
Morjadayan turned back to the camp. If anyone knew anything about the Tevis Rolls, it would be Vayim.
But I doubt she'll help willingly.
So now what? Jacob asked. We start looking,
Dougal said, stepping past Morjadayan. The transmuter knelt beside the nearest row of Tevis Rolls and began inspecting the objects one by one. Jacob groaned, but joined Dougal on the grass.
What are you thinking, Morgie? Silas asked.
Morgie?
He raised an eyebrow and turned to the short Arpranist.
Is Amandal rubbing off on you?
Silas giggled.
I'm just trying to lighten the mood.
Morjadayan gave her a weak smile. He studied her for a moment before answering.
If we find Vayim, she might be able to identify something that can help. She seems to know a lot more than she lets on.
Silas nodded, parting her lips.
She did know about the Yeltis and the Cistern. Maybe she knows something about that monster.
If she did, why didn't she say anything? Morjadayan wondered.
But Vayim and Keitel had fled when the monster first appeared. Perhaps she did know.
Well, we should find her.
Together, Morjadayan and Silas turned back to the camp. Most of those still eating were sitting on the grass in small circles. Several of the squad leaders were eating together, including Dardel. Morjadayan, however, didn't see Vayim among them. In fact, he didn't see the commander or the Mindalarnian lieutenant.
Perhaps Dardel knows where Vayim went.
Silas snapped her fingers.
To the tower, I bet. This way.
She hurried off, running across the dark teal grass and toward strange buildings that looked like trees. Vayim, Keidel, and Kalamir emerged from the cylindrical lift chamber and stepped onto the tower's eighth floor, the middle level of the third tier. The space beyond the lift chamber was almost identical to the seven-sided room on the first floor. The only differences were that there were no other doors, and a short hallway was aligned with the lift chamber.
This way,
Vayim said and strode into the hallway. The clicking of her boots echoed off the stone as she entered a curved corridor with polished stone walls. Partway down the curved hall was a six-sided archway leading to a large space. According to the texts from the Emperor, each level of the Tulidine Tower's third tier was divided into four large rooms.
In there.
She hurried to the archway. The room beyond the arch was quite large and shaped like a fan. Inside, terminals used to access Tardalim's various defenses jutted from the walls. To an ordinary man of Kaldah, the terminals probably looked like slanted desks. Fortunately for Vayim, such sophisticated things were not foreign to her.
Does it matter which one we use? Keidel asked.
Vayim shook her head and walked to the nearest terminal. Blue and green lines surrounded the slanted top, each glowing faintly. She touched the bottom corner, and blue lines shot from the terminal and into the air, forming a rectangular shape with rounded edges. Green light winked into existence within the rectangle, forming a basic greeting in the divine tongue. The greeting vanished and was replaced by the words, "Please enter the correct sequence."
More puzzles.
Narrowing her eyes, Vayim thumbed through the pages in her hands.
There.
She reordered the sheets, so the page about the tower's third tier was on top. It held specific instructions about how to use black spheres with inscriptions of the divine tongue etched into them.
But there are no black.
The slanted surface shifted and seven black spheres appeared. Crisp symbols formed upon each one, the most basic characters of the divine tongue. Had they formed by transmutative magic? If so, it had been too quick for her to catch.
That doesn't seem very efficient, Keidel said.
Vayim scowled at the lieutenant, then returned to the spheres. They had five symbols, arrayed so that when a sphere was gripped, one's fingers and thumb could easily touch each one. She looked at the sequence of characters used to access this particular part of Tardalim. They were an incoherent jumble, gibberish, really. After committing the sequence to memory, Vayim studied the seven spheres.
That should be easy enough.
She placed her hands on the spheres containing the sequence's first few characters, gently pressing her fingers upon the corresponding symbols. Once she completed the sequence, the spheres shone with white light and then vanished. The words also disappeared and were replaced by a directory of sorts for Tottenham's various defenses. But some of the words were surrounded by a black hue.
How remarkable,
Keidel said, stepping beside Vayam. It's hard to imagine that all of Kaldah was once this sophisticated. Vayam raised an eyebrow.
No, it's not.
She shifted her focus back to the directory. She touched the line of text labeled The Shift. The directory changed, becoming another directory with rows of numbers from 1 to 32. Wary, she touched the line with the number 1. The words changed as they had before, now with a detailed list of descriptive functions that undoubtedly had to do with the shifting halls.
This won't be a simple task, she thought.
Would she have to disable each function within each floor?
Irritating safeguards.
Keidel harrumphed, and Vayam turned to the lieutenant.
It looks like this will take some time.
A murmuring sigh left Calamir's lips, and he edged closer, whispering Vayam's name in a seductive tone.
Not now,
Vayam spat.
If I only had some way to bind him.
Why don't I activate another terminal? Keidel said. I can help move things along.
Vayam raised her brow at the lieutenant, but Keidel had been helpful in the past.
Fine,
she said, returning her focus to the words hovering in the air.
But be careful.
Silas led Morjadayan at a furious pace until they arrived at a towering seven-tiered structure whose white stone was barely visible beneath violet moss and multicolored vines. The tower looked like a rainbow. Morjadayan's eyes were drawn to a gigantic sphere hovering beside the building's highest tier.
How odd.
Bam is probably at the very top with Fendar, Silas said, moving straight for a round door surrounded by the strange vines.
She felt at the door, which had no knob.
I can't remember how to open this.
No sooner than the words left her mouth than green light shone from a groove along the door's center. In an instant, the door split in two down the groove, then slid apart, disappearing into the wall. Silas shrugged and hurried inside, entering a corridor untouched by the wild overgrowth. Morjadayan edged to the door. Had it reacted to Silas's voice? He studied the door, then whispered the word,
"Close."
Both parts of the door slid from the wall, shining along the groove before becoming one solid mass. Morjadayan nodded.
"Very interesting."
He studied the door for a moment, then said,
"Open."
The door complied, its slabs sliding into the wall.
"Morji,"
Silas called, her voice distant. Rousing himself, Morjadayan stepped inside.
"I'm coming."
To his surprise, Silas stood 100 finials away where the corridor emptied into a small room. He ran to join her, passing several doors and branching hallways. Together they entered a seven-sided room. Doors, each etched with glowing symbols, adorned the walls.
"It's this way,"
Silas said, moving to the farthest door on the left.
"We go in here. I think it's a lift of some sort."
As she neared the door, it slid open, revealing a cylindrical chamber. They hurried inside, and Silas touched a row of strange symbols etched into the chamber's wall. The doors shut, but opened again before Morjadayan could blink twice. He expected to hear conversation, but all was silent. Silas hurried out of the chamber, calling for Fendar. A large two-story room with white stone walls lay beyond the doors. It was empty except for a large, transparent blue sphere hovering atop a white stone table. Strange-looking desks jutted from the walls, each glowing with varying colors. Across the room was a balcony, part of its railing missing. A narrow pathway jutted from the balcony where a robed figure stood within blue light.
Is that Fendor? And is that a bridge?
Silas hurried through the room, still calling for Fendor. Morjadayan, however, returned his focus to the transparent sphere atop the table. It had many layers to it, but the center was mostly hollow. Orange lines were spread across the various layers, all leading to the center, and clustered within part of the center were yellow specks.
That can't be Tardalim, can it?
He pushed the thought aside as a joyous reunion carried from the balcony.
Best I join them, he thought, hurrying from the table.
Fendor and Silas stood upon the odd bridge, holding each other. They exchanged a brief kiss, Fendor seeming reluctant to step away.
I'm so relieved you're safe, he said. How is Amandal?
Silas shook her head.
Not good. I think he's getting worse. Have you seen Vayam?
Fendor set his jaw, then glanced across the bridge.
Let me check the map.
The map?
Morjadayan raised an eyebrow and examined the light surrounding the bridge. It was the same color as the sphere atop the table.
Incredible, isn't it?
Fendor said, chuckling.
Oh, the wonders of this place.
Taken aback, Morjadayan studied the blue light. It too had layers, like the sphere atop the table, as well as orange lines. One of Fendar's illusions zipped through the blue light, moving toward the center and into an area filled with tiny yellow specks.
Where is the monster? Silas asked.
On the 25th floor, Fendor said. I'll show you after I find Vayam.
Oh, I think she's in this tower.
Somewhere in the middle.
Yes, the middle level of the third tier.
Silas looked confused.
How did you figure that out?
Remember those odd dots? Fendor asked. The ones that were yellow but with red centers?
Silas nodded.
When Calamir and the others ran from the monster, those dots were among them. Once my illusion caught up with them after the battle, I compared the positions of the dots to where everyone stood in the hall. Vayam and Kaido were those dots with red in their centers.
Silas flinched.
What does that mean?
Fendor shrugged.
Different dots? Morjadayan thought, confused. I'm sorry, what dots?
The yellow ones, Fendor said, pointing toward the center of the transparent sphere.
Each of those yellow dots on the map represents one of us. Finch, if you've met him, is gray. Amandal's conjurations are also different colors.
Silas let out a heavy sigh.
So, why are Vayam and Kaido different?
Fendor shrugged again.
Come with me.
He turned, walking across the bridge. Morjadayan and Silas followed, passing through layer after layer of blue light as Fendor continued his explanation.
Now the monster? He's black and orange, like Finch said. But there was no black and orange dot anywhere on the map, at least until you all caught up with Morjadayan and the others.
So it just appeared?
Silas asked.
From where?
The illusionist shook his head.
Remember the other dot, the yellow with an orange center?
Silas nodded.
That dot is nowhere on the map, Fendor continued. And from what I heard, no one died in the battle with the monster. It should still be on the map.
Ulrich, Morjadayan thought, eyes widening.
But it's not, Fendor said. That yellow and orange dot went missing after the black and orange one appeared.
The illusionist continued speculating as the three of them entered the light representing the Tulidine roost. While Morjadayan eyed those yellow dots, he considered the problem with the monster, that Orath something, as Finch called it.
Was that not Ulrich that returned? But could this Orath whatever really take on another form?
He had heard of creatures that could mimic someone. Those creatures, phantasmal essences, were often the culprits behind most ghost stories. but the monster was no phantasmal essence.
Wait, Silas said, shaking an open hand. It was with them?
She turned to Morjadian, looking confused. Fendar nodded. Morjadian set his jaw. Uldric had to be that Orath thing.
Morji?
Silas poked his shoulder.
I think Orath, whatever his name, can change shape, he muttered.
Fendar looked confused.
The name Finch gave the monster. Now, last night, one of the necromancers came into camp wounded. He claimed they were attacked, and that he was the only survivor.
Silas paled as her eyes widened.
Oh, no. If that thing can shapeshift, what are we going to do?
Watch it from here, of course, Fendar sucked in his breath. It's the only way to be sure. But I doubt the monster will be able to navigate the 32nd floor. As you can see, the lines change so fast it's almost impossible to navigate.
Morjadian turned and stepped into the light representing the 32nd floor. The orange lines and arrows, however, weren't changing, nor were the halls.
Why aren't they moving?
The shift, as the others had called it, was swift on that floor.
That's not right, Fendar said, shaking his head. Why isn't the shift happening?
Vayum,
Morjadian thought. Clenching his teeth, he stepped into the lair representing the 31st floor. Its rearranging of halls should also have occurred, but the orange lines were as they had been when he first stepped through the giant illusion.
She stopped the shift, he said, biting back a growl.
Vayum? Silas asked, her tone wary. But how could she stop the shift?
A sense of determination swelled within Morjadian as he crossed the bridge.
Come on. We need to find Vayum and stop her. Fendar, we're going to need your help.